Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Joseph G., and I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs and co-creator of RumRadio.org. RumRadio.org was created to inform, inspire, and empower sponsorship locally and internationally to be the very best, both personally and spiritually. A sponsor is someone who takes you through the 12 steps. A sponsor is a guide, a mentor, a friend, and a teacher. A sponsor is the older brother and sister we never had. There are many 12-step programs. Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous, and on Anonymous. There's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem, no one will tell you where they hold the meetings. As people in recovery, we have learned that addiction is a spiritual malady requiring a spiritual solution. We are not weak people trying to get strong, nor are we bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. Rum Radio is for anyone that thinks they might have a problem with excessive compulsive behavior that manifests itself in addiction. RumRadio.org addresses the A&A model, but can be easily conformed to any adverse spiritual malady that manifests itself into addictive behavior. The particular spiritual malady is but a symptom of the disease. At RumRadio.org, we get down to causes and conditions. We in recovery have discovered that the one assurance of getting happy, joyous, and free was to work with someone who suffers from the same malady. But you can't give away something you don't have. Rum Radio is that resource, and like usual, if you find a benefit, pass it on. Take what you need and leave the rest. I have dedicated my time, talents, and treasure to this end. The credit for this work is God's and the fellowship. This is Joseph G. See you on the radio. RumRadio.org.
Hello,
right, this
good
is evening,
Joseph G.
Gentlemen. This is
Hi,
Harold
this is Joseph G.
All right.
Go ahead, Errol.
Well, I just wanted to say hello to everybody, and let's invite people to call in.
Please, this is Joseph. Good evening. Saturday evening, another Saturday night. The call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. I wanted to a couple of acknowledgments, Harold, before we get started. Recovery Today, it's Recovery Today magazine. They're also on the internet at recoverytoday.net. They put out a magazine with some really great information on it. It was at the International. They're all over the country, I guess in some parts of the world also. And online, they have a vast network. I don't know exactly, and they do an actual hard copy magazine too that's distributed. Some of the clubs buy that, or some of the groups buy that, like 20, 25 at a time. The reason I mention that is that they've taken one of the stories from Rum Radio. It's if Bill was the sail, Dr. Bob was the anchor. They're going to be running it with a logo for the radio show. And I told them that, and I really appreciate what they have to say, too. It's really good recovery information. I don't think there's such thing as too much good information. So it's recoverytoday.net if you'd like to go to see the article and to see other information, which is really good. And it's free every month online. You can subscribe to it, and it'll just come into your inbox, and you have all those articles without charge. Their idea really is not to make money as much as to be a benefit. I wanted to thank WNAH in Nashville. This is the radio station that's broadcasting us live out of Nashville, parts of Kentucky, Tennessee, I believe maybe parts of Arkansas. They do this as a public announcement to give back to the community in respect to their customers and to their listening public. I also wanted to mention two other recovery blog talk radio sites. One is Sober Couch. You can find them on Blog Talk, on Blog Talk Radio. Also, they have a Facebook. They're on 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. That's Kyle and Chase. And on Thursdays with Sarah and Joellen. Really good. I've been on it many times. I've heard a lot of good stuff on there. Real people, real recovery. And my good friend Oliver, he has the Half Measures Room. Really good recovery, solid recovery. We all have a little different line and take, but Oliver's Half Measures Room is Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock. Our goal is that that whatever night you need a meeting or you need to get something out or you need to hear some good positive recovery, it'll be available to you. Some people can't get to a meeting. Some people, whatever the task, or I have a sponsee that's a ship captain and he's out in the middle of the ocean. So this is something that for people who are infirmed or can't get to, this is a perfect venue to continue in the program. Always stay connected. That's the key to long-term recovery. Harold, do you have anything to say?
Well, I just want to express some appreciation for Joseph making his website available and this radio program available as his form of giving back. This isn't a money-making scheme. Actually, it costs him and all the volunteers that are helping out now. We have a new sound man. His name is Chase. And so it's really a pleasure to see all this happening. And the spirit of it, which Joseph is dedicated to, is the spirit of giving back, the spirit of helping others. And over again in the big book, it says that the one thing that will help us get better when nothing else will is working with others. And so in that light, if you are unable to get out, go ahead and call the AA hotline number, the 800 number, and people will come to you. We have a responsibility. Anytime people reach out, we have a responsibility to respond to that. And sometimes in some communities that's gotten a little weak, but it's up to us to strengthen it again and be there and give your name, give your number to the main office and be one of those people that will go to nursing homes and take someone with you. Don't go alone. Go in pairs. That's the way this is done. But it's very refreshing and renewing and nurturing for you. You'll get more out of it than you give. And that's the way this program works. I love the program. I owe my life to the program, and I want to see it really grow and expand.
Thank you, Harold. Tonight's topic, and if you'd like to call in and give us your take on it or your experience with it, I call it Myths, Urban Legends, and the Parroting of the AA Conference-Approved Police. There's a quote I use from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The one good thing about repeating your mistakes is that you know when to cringe. Dick B. actually wrote this article, but I've had experience with it too. I'll tell you how I got involved with that. My sobriety date is January 10th, 1997. And for years, I've heard in the meetings, is this conference-approved literature? Year in and year out. And, you know, when you hear something over and over again for a long period of time, it kind of reinforces the fact that it must be true. I had never investigated it. It never really interested me. I had no reason to look, and I assume most people don't because they hear that and, you know, the big book and the 12 and 12 and, you know, other things are conference, the pamphlets, and that's if we stay to that, we know that we're right on target with program principles and practices. I got a book from Hamilton Beasley. It was 12-Step Sponsorship, How It Works. And I met him at the I knew him. He was in my home group in Austin. And went to his meeting and purchased the book, and he signed it for me and put it away. Never really thought much about it. And then for some reason, a couple of years later, it popped out of my library just when I needed it the most. And it was about sponsorship. And I started reading the thing, and I go, like, holy cow, I had no idea. It was really great information. I really didn't know how to sponsor. I really wasn't quite sure. My sponsor was a good guy. You know, read the first 164 pages, take two aspirins, and call me in the morning. And my experience is, if you want it bad enough, the sponsor is not that critical. If you want it bad enough, you're going to figure out some way how to stay sober. If you're in enough pain, I was in plenty of pain, so that'll give you a clue. So now it was my turn to give back, but I really wasn't sure what a sponsor does or doesn't do, and it explained it all right there. And I got real excited about it, and I came across Clancy's 7 questions and put all this together, and I'm real excited. And when you get excited about that, it's called enthusiasm. You know what the definition of a sale is?
No.
The transference of enthusiasm.
There
so
you go, yeah.
I'm a salesman by nature, so I get enthusiastic. I want to sell you the idea that this is really good. So I'm going around, and I'm showing people the book, and I'm giving them Clancy 7 questions, and I'm doing a workshop at my home group in Houston. And it didn't really go off that well. We were getting some miracles in there. I mean, sometimes as many as 10 or 12 people, 5, 4, 7 like that, but it never really kind of took off. And I did it every year for every Saturday morning at 10:30 for a year. And finally, I said, you know, it's not really taken off. And the way most meetings like that die is that someday somebody's not going to show up. And it was getting small enough where I said, you know, maybe I should just, this is a lot of effort for such a little feedback. And I said, you know, as long as one person shows up, I'm going to continue on. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, nobody showed. Oh, but the argument I got when I tried to do the workshop was, I showed them the book that I was going to use, and several people said, is that conference-approved literature? I says, well, I don't know. I says, you know, it's this big book in there, and the 12 and 12 is in there, and messages from the heart, and, you know, and it's all kinds of good information that I've seen and read before. But I don't know if the book itself is conference approved. How do you get this vaunted title? So I called up the GSO in New York. And lo and behold, it turns out that they get calls like that all the time. And they told me there was no such thing.
Aha, yeah.
And I go like, wait a minute. Have you ever had any experience with that?
No, I haven't directly experienced that, and I haven't had a reason to call New York, but I can imagine easily that they have much better things to do than sit around and review literature. There's such a vast amount of new literature coming out all the time, and then give their stamp of approval to it, or disallow it, you know, that's not really the spirit of AA. If you look at the 12 traditions, every word was carefully, not only carefully written, but then applied and then adjusted to achieve the best result over years and years and years. These aren't just good ideas. They are time-tested principles. And the traditions, as well as the steps of AA, are time tested, and we shouldn't take them lightly. So, one of the traditions is that we don't. How does it read?
Which one?
We don't have opinions on outside issues.
Yes, so that the AA name will not be drawn into public controversy.
That's right. And so the spirit of the thing would suggest that they don't have conference-approved literature. There isn't enough time in the year to do that.
Actually, I found that the Grapevine is not a conference-approved magazine either, because
right.
There is no such thing. There's no such critter, so how could you do it? From what I found out, any AA can read anything, anytime, anywhere, for any purpose, inside or outside of AA. And that includes comic books, computer manuals. There's no tradition that says otherwise. If there is no tradition that can or should or will censor or censure what is presented at a meeting, whether in discussion or by reading or by literature on a table, and if someone thinks he's found the mystical tradition, tell him a fact and tell him the traditions are not laws, are not binding on anyone, and was never intended to prohibit speech or freedom of religion by AAs or others.
That's right. And any careful reading of the first 164 pages will reveal that that's the spirit of it. They don't prohibit. They do make suggestions, but it's really, the whole thing is based on relationships, forming relationships, and that's what I think is so valuable about your focus, is that you are dedicated to the idea of sponsorship, which is focused on the recovery relationships, and we desperately need to return to that. I've seen that. My sobriety date is December 28th, 1987, and I've seen some big changes, and they're not changes for the better. I think we've gotten away from some of the basics. We need to return to those basics. And the main one, I agree with Joseph, is the idea of relationships, of sponsorship, of sitting down with pen and paper and person and doing the 12 steps. Working the 12 steps with pen and paper and person.
And as quickly as possible, I would add. Now let me ask you this. Now, according to the understanding that I have, and Dick B sent me his article, which is a great article. I posted it on rumradio.org. I highly respect Dick B. If anybody knows who that is, he's an icon, like Clancy is. Dick B is probably, he's on television, he's been on the radio, interviewed. He's written over 500 articles, I don't know how many books. He's a Princeton lawyer. He's a graduate from Princeton. Very smart guy. He's all program. He bleeds AA. He knows the history. I believe he knew Dr. Bob, and I think he's 86 now. He knew Dr. Bob and Clarence and Grace, if some of you, I don't know if you know who they are. Clarence always said he was the one who started AA. He knew Cersei. So he's one of the links, one of the few links left to the origins of the program. He's a treasure of information. This is his article. I try to contact him when I can and go over some of the stuff that I post just to make sure I'm within program principles and understandings. He's great for that stuff. But let me ask you this. Now, we just had a conflict in one of the groups I go to. It was a big deal. They wanted to say in group conscious that we couldn't say Jesus Christ in the meeting and that there was no reading out of the Bible. Now, the problem, we don't usually read out of the Bible. That's kind of understood. But there's a newcomer came in, a Christian kid, and he hadn't worked the steps yet, but he found the love of Jesus, and that understanding of Christendom has helped keep him sober. And he's real excited about that. He's right now, he's a Christian zealot, and he wants a spread the good news. And he read something, I think, out of the scriptures. And one of the ladies there took exception to that and called a group conscience. And the group conscience got very passionate to be kind about it. Now, the problem is the way I see it, and you tell me how you see it. Okay. Now, there's a newcomer walks into the room, and sometimes newcomers don't identify themselves, especially in the larger meetings. They kind of just sit in the back, and they kind of fade into the woodwork, you know. They don't say they're a visitor. They don't say they're a newcomer. They say nothing. Somebody says, okay, I'm going to read out of the Bible. And this is his first meeting or her first meeting. And he's or she is an agnostic or an atheist or is angry with God and has had from one reason or another, had enough with organized religion. And somebody goes, hey, let me read this part out of the Bible. This will help the group. What's your feelings on that?
Well, my experience is that when I first got to these rooms, I was pretty confused. I had a lot of misconceptions about the Bible and about religion, and it's easy to blame religion. And now, keep in mind, I hadn't read it, but I had a lot of opinions about it anyway. And
I run into that all the time.
Yes. Luckily, there were folks who just loved me until I could love myself. They said, keep coming back. And they accepted me, and I could find my own higher power. And I had some wonderful sponsors who were rigorously honest with me. And so I kept coming back, and I kept coming back. I did 1,000 meetings in my first 2.5 years, and it was great. It saved my life, basically. And so, but then I began to understand more about the concept of contempt prior to investigation, and I had quite a bit of contempt that I inherited from my mom. She described herself as a recovering Catholic, and she had no use for organized religion. So I had not read the Bible, and my sponsor said, "Well, this is not appropriate. You can't be that contemptuous if you haven't even read it." So I said, "Okay, I will read it and then be contemptuous." So I began to read the Bible. Well, you can probably imagine what happened next, because as you launch into any careful reading of the Bible, it begins to come alive. That's my experience. And I was so taken with this. This was over a decade ago, and I'm more passionate about it now than ever. I really love reading the scriptures and studying the scriptures. It's valuable to have a teacher, who's an expositional teacher, preacher. That's someone who will help you let the Bible explain itself, and it will if you can learn a little bit about flipping back and forth between chapters and books. And so it's more fun than ever. I've found a church where it's really a great fit. So it's been a long and difficult process. And in the beginning, if people had tried to ram Christianity or religion, any particular religion actually, down my throat, I would have run the other direction, and I may not have the relationship I have now with the scriptures. So I think their light touch and their understanding and their empathy is so valuable in the beginning. I'm not sure what to think of someone saying, well, let me read from the Bible. I'm not sure what that would have done to my experience.
Well, this is when I came into the rooms. I have a little story for you. There was a fellow walking in the Alps, and he's taken back by the beauty of the scenery, and he's high up on a mountain, and he gets a little too close to the edge and drops off. And just a short way down, there's a branch from a tree hanging out off the side, and he grabs onto it. And there's no one around. And he looks down. It's about 900 feet to the bottom. And in a moment of desperation, he calls up and he goes, is anybody up there? And there's no sound. And then he calls up. He says, Lord, Lord, please save me. And he calls several times. And finally, the third time, he hears the voice of the Lord and say, he said, do you trust me? And he says, yeah, I trust you, Lord. He says, well, let her let go. And the fella says, you don't understand. It's 900 feet to the bottom, and if I let go, I'm gonna die. And the Lord says, no, I need you to let go. And the fella ponders it for a while, and he looks up again, and he goes, you sure there's nobody else up there? And that's sometimes how we come into the program. We know that we have to let go and let God, but this is kind of a scary place to be. So anytime it smacks of organized religion, especially initially. Now, to some, they'll embrace that. My experience is some have tried organized religion to get well, and it had not worked for them. One way or the other, I've had a lot of experience as a sponsor where sponsees have a very negative view of organized religion, Christendom, all kinds of things, all kinds of reasons why. And any mention of the Bible or Christendom like that is an immediate turnoff. My experience, and sometimes I think it has to be met with a certain amount of understanding where they're at. I like
That's
the scripture that says
with my sponsees is that they needed some TLC, some understanding, and just to take it very slow on that point. And that's why I was listening to that old video by Father Martin talking about the steps. He had a chance to meet Bill W. in 1960, and they were focusing on the fact that Bill W. did change. He did take the word God out of the first or second step and put in a power greater than yourself for the very reason you just mentioned, Joseph.
Okay. Yeah. I think the other. How come the same? I think the other problem is that it says in the scriptures you have to give them milk before they can eat meat. And when you get into the scriptures and the deeper biblical philosophy about religion and it's too much. They're not ready for it yet. They might come to that understanding in time.
Yeah, I had to work up to it very slowly. It took years. I was really grateful for the slow pace and my ability to find a power greater than myself. And I didn't have to adopt anyone else's idea. I was allowed to develop my own idea, and now I have a very, very deep appreciation for religion, but I didn't then.
Yes, you weren't ready for it. What I've experienced personally is that... Oh, Kyle's on. What I've experienced personally is that it's a process. Just like the steps are a process.
Yes, not an event, a process.
It's a process, and that's including growing spiritually. We have, hello, Kyle. Are you there?
Are you on mute?
Hey, Joseph.
Kyle? Hey, man, how you doing?
How are you, man?
Hello,
Kyle.
You been listening to...
Hello, Joseph. Are you there?
I'm there.
All right. I can hear you now, man. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. You sounded funny there for a second. This don't sound like... It sounds like it was too... The voice was too modulated and too low. You know, you're such an up guy, you know? Like, who is this guy?
Well, man, that's me on my... That's me when I'm the host, and I'm like, when I'm calling in, man, I'm a depressed, anxious individual. That's just the mask I wear when I got my host hat on.
Kyle hosts Sober Couch. It's really good. They have a real. It's real real with real recovery. He does a great job. It's great talking to Kyle. Kyle is always very gracious and acknowledging of information for the people who call, and I think the folks really appreciate Kyle's sensitivity to what they're saying.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that. That's more than I deserve, but I really do appreciate it.
Well, oh, by far, but I know.
But that's what we do. how's your deal going? Bring me up to date. I just found out you were on. I just called in, and I'm a little bit. I don't know exactly what the. I'm excited to find out you're doing a show.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, you inspired me, kiddo.
Right on.
And I thought maybe this is a good way to get Rum Radio out a little further. And Chase was also suggesting maybe, you know, we were talking with Mary Sue Ellen and Sarah, you know, about throwing in together and see if maybe we can help each other. Get the word out, you know, give folks a venue, you know, because some nights they can't make Saturday or they can't make Tuesday or they can't make Wednesday, and they'd like to have somewhere they can go.
I think it would make sense. I hope we do that. I'd like to see all of us have the same, you know, it's easier to come to the same, you know, the same, you know, place, the same, you know, number. I hope we do that. I think it'd be cool. I do.
Yeah, we'll do whatever, you know, technology allows us to do. Chase, maybe we can chip in, you know, and lower the amount of cost for everybody, and that would help. You know, we all throw in, you know, it's like pushing a wheel, you know, put your shoulder to the wheel and push it along, you know.
Yeah, and I think it'll grow. I'm totally excited about that idea. Definitely.
Many
so what are you guys talking about tonight?
Okay, I'll give you the title. Myths, Urban Legends, and the Parroting of the AA Conference Approved Police.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about conference-approved literature.
And actually the fact that there is no conference-approved police. They don't edit, they don't ban stuff. Everything's wide open, and based on the relationships in recovery and people sharing their experience, strength, and hope.
That's interesting. Now, that last piece about parroting, what does that mean? You know, I got the myths and the urban. What's the parroting of... Is that when people are saying, well, that's not conference approved? Is that what you're talking about?
That's, yeah. And people say, well, you can't say that. That's not conference approved literature. Like if I bring in messages from the heart or Drop the Rock or New Pair of Glasses or Joe and Charlie. No. We can't hear that. Is that conference approved literature? Well, I don't know. Because I've heard it for so many years, and that's what we were talking about. What's your take on that?
Well, you know what? I hear that. I go to a meeting where the alpha males of the meeting definitely have decided that that's the case, and I hear it a lot. You know, when did you like that? The alpha males of the, so they kind of, you know, if somebody says something, or if they're given a medallion, or they start reading out of a, I don't know, who knows, Deepak Chopra, or something, right?
Velveteen Rabbit, yeah, okay.
You know, a lot of times somebody will say, you know, that's an outside issue, it's not conference approved or whatever. I don't know, a lot of the stuff that I have found and used in my recovery is not conference approved. <You know?
laughs> It is conference approved, but not our conference.
They never
say which conference was it approved at. They never ask. No, this is conference approved, but this is approved in Bangladesh.
Here's my take quickly though. I try when I go to an AA meeting, I try to stick to the least controversial thing I can and still make it about recovery and direct it towards, you know, the meetings I go to are mostly, you know, are AA, like, related meetings. And I found a lot of other outlets in recovery, you know, through one of these places is called The Retreat. They're a lot more open about stuff there. Everything doesn't have to be, you know, from the office in New York or something. You know, and I like that. Man, I just like, you know, expanding the boundaries. And I mean, because if that's the way it had been from the beginning, then nothing would have ever been read, because, you know, what, they didn't have anything to begin with. So it was, our common sense and stuff sometimes gets overridden by our rigidity, I think. But you know, what do I know? I'm not really one of these guys that I don't really understand a lot about how the you know, the structure of that, of the AA thing, it really has worked too much. But my last thing I'll say about it is I've gotten a lot out of things that you know, from all sorts of different, you know, I mean, recovery related materials, and I don't mind it when people bring it in. I mean, you know, but I know a lot of people do. I think I'm glad you're talking about it. I'll shut up. I'd like to hear what's still being said.
Well, I had an interesting experience years ago. One of my first sponsors, a great old guy. He passed away some years ago. He was a World War II veteran and everything. But I was really new in the rooms, and he had come up with, and he had like 33 years or something. And so everyone would just listen to him and worship him and bow at his feet. And he told me, he took me aside one time and said that he's got a great idea, a great improvement on the 12 steps, to take out the word we and put in the word I. Make it a personal thing, because that's really his experience. And so he wanted to improve the 12 steps and add the word I and reject the word we. And I thought about that for a while, and I typed it out that way, and that's, you know, and some of my recovery doesn't make common sense at all. It goes against, it's not intuitive. It goes against what I used to call common sense.
So I've got to be super aware. I want to stand on the shoulders of the people that have come before me. My best thinking got me in huge trouble. So I kicked it around for a while, but then I had the opportunity to go to lots more meetings. I was saying earlier that I've gone to about 1,000 meetings in the first 2.5 years alone. And so it slowly became, and as I read the 164 pages, it really came clear. I hadn't really read those in with a great focus, but once I did that, it became clear that it's a we program. That's what it's all about. That's the key. We can't just throw out we and put I in there. So I learned a couple of things from this old-timer. One is that I've got to really hang in there, make no decision alone. That became one of my mottos. Make no decision alone, talk things over. That's what I like about this radio program and many other things. It gives me a chance to talk to others and bounce ideas. But I also learned that it's a we program. And then I really appreciate Joseph's focus on sponsorship, because there we are again. It's a we program.
Yeah, you know, Kyle made a really good point. In the beginning of AA, there really wasn't a lot of literature to dig into. You know, before the book was even published, and it took a while to get the book together. The originators of the big book at one point was called the James Gang, because a lot of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous comes from the Book of James. There's a lot in there from the Book of James. When two or three alcoholics call themselves, without any other affiliation, could call themselves an AA group. It's almost the exact verbiage. When two or three are gathered in my name, I'll be there. So there's a lot of parallels, tremendous amount from scriptural understanding. But people look at that as religion, and what the important thing to look at it is that these are eternal truths. It doesn't matter, you know, whether, because it's in the Bible, it doesn't make it not an eternal truth. Or if it's in the that's in another, a different program.
Program,
in the Gita,
yeah.
Or whatever, yeah, or another area. You know, we're looking for eternal truths, and the reason we're doing that is to increase our spiritual understanding. We're supposed to grow spiritually. In the beginning, they would have, the Bible was part and parcel of all meetings. They wouldn't start a meeting unless they had a Bible, the big book. James Allen, As a Man Thinketh, was in there. Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount. There was a lot of really good higher-level thinking information to help the alcoholics stay sober. The point is that whether it's a comic book, an owner's manual to an automobile, if that's going to help somebody, what people are afraid of is that they're going to dilute the message. What a lot of folks, in my experience, have missed is the message has already been diluted. Open-mindedness, principles before personalities, and the reason why contempt prior to investigation, nothing will bar all argument and keep a man in forever into ignorance, as the concept of contempt prior to investigation. Take a look. Open your mind. You know, the two things you need for a successful life is an open mind and an open parachute when you need one. Why close off if you read something and you look at it? And then you can have contempt after investigation. You could look at something and say, no, this isn't programmed. This isn't right. This isn't helpful. Now you know. But to say something is not, when you have no idea what it is, is ludicrous.
So well, I really appreciate you saying that that there are things that we just need to reject. And I'm reminded of the lady that wrote the book about moderation. You can just cut down. You can drink a little bit. You've got to learn to control it. She wrote the book.
Yeah.
You remember that? And she made a lot of money off of that book. And it was total garbage, and the proof was in the pudding in that she drove drunk, crashed head-on into a family, killed them all, was put in prison, and she apologized to the world, took her book off the market, and changed her ways, finally. But it cost several lives to do that, probably thousands of lives. If people were returning
several lives that we know of. Yeah, we don't know how many people read the book. I think it's important to remember folks that are not in the program, and I think it's just a knack. When I was in Vietnam, with the Viet Cong had figured out, especially with the American, but I think it's just generic for most people, we're looking for the easier, softer way, or the path of least resistance. I was on a search and destroy mission, and I was driving I think it was a gunner on a track, on a Bradley 113, and we were ferrying some infantry, and we came to this section in the jungle. It looked like a VC training area, and infantry would jumped off, and there was this one kid, I remember, a young guy from New Jersey. I mean, and I was 19 or 20, so he looked really young. I mean, I don't know how much younger he could have been. And he was brand new in the country, which is probably the most dangerous time back then. You didn't know anything. You didn't know enough to be scared, practically. And we told him, whatever you do, stay off the trails. Because they're expecting us, instead of to walk through the bushes and the brambles and the briars and, you know, where the snakes and all that was, that we will walk to the path of least resistance. The easier, softer way. And I told this kid that, too. He jumps off the track, and he walks right into the into this intersection where four or five paths, trails met. And right there in the middle, boom! It was wasn't really bad. I mean, it was bad for him. He stepped on a booby trap, and probably most of his toes, probably front of his foot, got blown off. So it was probably a single shell. Everybody froze, and I remember everybody stopped where they were, and the only kid that went to get him was a Mormon. What do they call? It's a guy, first aid guy. He's the only one who made
medic.
The move. Medic, and he went over it. I mean, that really impressed me, because I wasn't going anywhere. I knew the ground was booby trapped. I'm not moving. You know, like everybody just froze. He was the only kid who run up to help this kid. I was really impressed. The point I'm trying to make after that whole long story is that the alcoholic is a prime example of an easier, softer way. If somebody tells you I have a book that you'll read and you'll get out of alcoholism instead of doing the hard work that's required. The program is simple, but it's not easy. And the word not easy means there's work. There's certain things you have to do. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Well, I'm willing to go to any length as long as it's not a lot of work. You know, I'm willing to go to any length as I don't miss my reruns of Bonanza. You know, I'm willing to go to any length unless, except. So if we can get an easier, softer way, if we could take a pill, and they have them now, this fellows tell me in the program, where you could take a pill and it'll stop the cravings for alcohol. I says, well, what happens if you can't get the pill? What if we're in a hurricane zone? What if the electricity goes out and you can't get to the pharmacy and get the pill? He says, gee, I don't know. He says, I guess I'll just be out of luck. I said, had you considered working?
Or what if you can't afford the $750 a month for the pill? Yeah,
yeah.
I know that.
And I says, how about working the steps and not depending on the pill? You know, how about trying to find, instead of finding the, how about instead of living in the rooms of AA, actually doing the program? But we're off topic a little bit. So the point is that anything that AA finds useful to help the alcoholic get and maintain sobriety is acceptable in AA. Kyle was saying we have the alpha males, we have old timers in the program. They're sort of the guardians of the faith. They mean well. They're afraid that the message will get diluted. They're disciplinarians. They're going to hold the line. They mean well, and I think but the rigidity seems to parallel their arthritis. They become arthritic.
Well, they are dedicated to being watchdogs for AA, and if they would use that same energy to be dedicated to reaching out, reaching back when someone reaches out, it being responsible to show up and form recovery relationships, I think we'd be further along the road. They need to have the same dedication to taking on or helping people find sponsors that they do to watchdogging the literature. That's my opinion.
I agree 100%. And I Dick B. wrote an article about, let's see, is that, I don't know if Kyle's back or, is that you, Kyle, or no? Who is that? Chase? Nobody, okay. About the rigidity in AA. I want you to consider this. In 1981, the General Services Organization, which is the main function of AA, it's the administrative area, checked the population, a census. And, of course, in AA, it's like counting cats at best. They had 2 million people in the rooms of recovery. I think they just went by the number of meetings, the average attendance in the meeting, or whatever they did, that they came up with a number. 30 years later, or 29 years later, 2010, January of 2010, the survey showed. And again, you want to take a guess, Harold?
Well, I think I heard the number 2,100,000. But the population of the world increased dramatically.
By one-third. The whole population of the world has increased by one-third, and we've increased by 100,000. So if we were to stay, if we flatlined, we would have 3 million by keeping up with the population. There's more alcoholics, there's more drug addicts than there ever been before on the planet. If you don't believe me, take a look at Mexico. See what's going on about the transition of drugs into this country. And, of course, alcoholism is still on the rampage. So there's more alcoholics, more drug addicts than there ever been before, and now we're losing ground. Okay, why? Okay, well, we have there's NA, and then we have CA, Cocaine Anonymous, and there's all these offshoots. At last count, the churches have diluted the 12 steps 118 times. My church has done the same. I asked them the question, if the 12 steps is not from God, why have you adopted it? And if it is from God, why do you feel the need to change it? This is, I think, part of the problem. Some of it, I think, is the rigidity, not being open-minded, the contempt prior to investigation, and getting back, we started in the beginning of this, getting back to a back-to-basics format. Getting the newcomer as he walks through the door. We're not going to the hospitals like we used to. We're not going to Skid Row. I'm sure there's some that's still doing that. I hope there is. But in my experience, I don't see that. I see people coming through the door and not being the old timers would have been fighting each other to get to that guy. They're gold coming through the door. Men and women coming in with their own car, still have wristwatches. You know, they're washed but not clean. I wrote this. We can go to Skid Row. That I already know. And like Bob and Bill, I can go to the hospital. Now I hear tell they come under their own steam, washed but not clean, and desperate for simple instruction. The next time this golden opportunity walks through the doors, I will push and shove and help them find their seat so my own recovery becomes complete. And I think
Wonderful piece.
Thank you. That's what I believe that's the direction AA needs to go to start recapturing the momentum that we've lost so many years ago. This is a great program. It's a program for the ages. This is a God-given program for a specific group of people. The only problem is the people. I like people who say, when a newcomer comes in, we'll tell them, hey, I got good news and I got bad news. The bad news is most of these people here have been to Penn State and the state pen, asylums, housewives, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. You're going to have that's the good news. The bad news is the solution. We're the solution. We are the solution, the men and women of AA. We're the ones to help the next sufferer. And the reason for that is that by helping you, it helps me attain and maintain sobriety. Bill W. said, the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities don't. So it
that's
just breaks it. Down to that. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Two people, Ebby. Dr. Bill W. Ebby was Bill W.'s sponsor. Bill W. sponsored Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had 2 days sober and went with Bill W. to the hospital, town's hospital, and got Bill D. number three. So Ebby had 60 days and worked his six steps. Bill W. had 5 months. He had worked his six steps. Got Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had 2 days when he went with Bill to get Bill D. What are we waiting for? Some of the literature says a year. You know, when I got to Post Oak and Houston, it was like, oh, they're doing a step a month. A step a month? Yeah, so this
but
way they have a year.
Literature, that's the whole question.
Well, I looked at the AA pamphlet, and they suggested a year. And I think it's misunderstood that I don't know where that year comes from, who came up with it. I had a sponsee from New Jersey in his group. You had to go to meetings for a year before they would allow you to work the steps. That's what the year gives you.
Oh, my goodness.
So you could see, yeah, I mean, it's how long can you tread water, Noah?
My first sponsors were real, very dedicated to the big book, very dedicated to the steps, and dedicated to reaching out, going when we're called, go. And they took me. They took me along. We did all kinds of things, some quite difficult because people were in bad, bad shape. And we went together. We did it together. We answered the calls that came in. He would receive a call in the middle of the night. I got some calls in the middle of the night. For a while, I lived in a city in Mexico.
We got 35 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll save that story for next time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Yeah. Again, thank you, WNAH in Nashville. Remember the Recovery Today magazine. I think you really enjoy the piece, and a lot of really good, not just my piece, of course, I'm partial to that, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. So I think it's recoverytoday.net. Thank you for calling, and we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Actually, Harold?
Yes.
Yeah, we're still recording. There's recording time. Now, we're not live right now.
But oh, I see.
If they go to the, if anybody goes to the archive, they can hear this because this is still being recorded.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah,
well,
there's another
one. Well, what I started to say is that the real key for my early recovery was going with my sponsor out on some of these calls that came in. People would call in wanting help, and we would go. And so when I got to Mexico, I lived in Mexico for 4 years. Lo and behold, the U.S. consulate called me, and he had a friend who was a doctor, and from time to time, he would get calls from people who were in trouble with drugs or alcohol in that city, and he didn't know quite what to do, and the doctor wasn't sure quite what to do, but in many situations, I had been through many experiences with just that sort of thing, so I put together a half a dozen ministers, three doctors, the U.S. consulate, and then some friends that were in recovery, and we kind of formed a crisis team so that we could go out when somebody called for help. We went and answered that call. It was not easy, but I had had so many positive experiences early in recovery that I made it work. That's the spirit of it. That's the thing that kind of extends your idea of sponsorship and takes it to the spot where it's supposed to go. We've got to reach out when those calls come in.
What I've noticed, Harold, is more. I don't see a lot of clubs doing 12-step work anymore. I see less and less all the time. Even clubs that normally would have done it are not doing it. I don't know why.
Well, it's kind of intimidating. It's inconvenient. Calls come in late at night. It's kind of like being a volunteer fireman.
You think it has anything to do with perceived danger these days? There's so many just really violent, weird, strange, ferocious people.
That might have something to do with it. That is a factor. That is something that's different in our day and age, I think, especially with the people in their 20s and 30s that have gotten so wrapped up in meth. That's an amazing and awful substance.
Yeah, I saw a picture where they actually showed the brain cells boiling away.
Yes, the new brain imagery has made it really easy to see that what we thought was the case really is the case. It stops brain function. So does ecstasy, for that matter. You can go on the net and see these brain images of young people that have just used ecstasy once or twice, and their brain looks like it's functioning at the level, same level as a person 80 years old. It is amazing. And they act that way too. So the willingness to go out, help people, respond to the calls that come in, I think that's a very important aspect of service work that for some reasons has largely fallen by the wayside. What do you think?
I don't see it, and I had belonged to some of the bigger, you know, clubs here. Post Oak is one of the big ones, and Spring Branch. You know, you would think in the larger clubs like that, I mean, they're pretty well organized, and they have a gazillion meetings a day, and very rare do I see any 12-step. I think the effort, I see more effort going to the prisons, but I think even that to some degree is falling off. I think people are not involved as they used to be. I think just general in the general society, people are more self-involved and self-absorbed. Maybe not so much because that it's a choice, but because the economy has gone down so bad. I'm making an excuse for the general population, but people are working that many more hours for a little amount of money. And there's only 24 hours in a day, like always. And,
but I,
you know, how could
people do not put, if people don't put their recovery first, they're not going to have a job, they're not going to have a car, they're not going to have a house or a family. They've really got to get back to basics and get their top priority in place. It's got to be recovery.
You know, once they have the house and they have the car and they have the wife and they have the kids, the demand, the pain is gone, and the demand to give back is also dissipated. They have a good life now because of the AA program. I know people, they went 5 years, he got real religious. His wife doesn't even know that he was even an alcoholic. He confided in me one time, he belongs to my church. And he says, you know, I never told my wife that I belong to, you know, they've been married 20 years. And I go, that isn't that interesting, but what am I going to say? I'm not going to tell her anything. That's not my deal. You know, he doesn't give anything back, but he's, you know, he's a stalwart in the church. I mean, he's good. He's a good man, and he gives back on a spiritual basis. And I said, well, you know, look, I'm confident I'm not going to drink, and I do this to give back. God has prepared me in a certain way to be of maximum service, and I'm doing what I've been given to do. So I'm lucky in that sense. But anyway,
yes,
that's my deal. Oh, guess what?
My experience with some sponsees, my experience is that one of the ways they get into dangerous thinking is the thought, I'm never going to drink again. Because once they say that, then the disease can say, well, okay, you've got it made, you're cured, you're never going to drink again, so you can stop calling your sponsor, stop going to meetings, stop working the steps, because you're never going to drink again. And the minute they stop doing the work, their recovery, their spiritual condition is reduced, and their recovery is undermined, and lo and behold, they find that they're drinking again, and then they're using again, and it's a mess. So we have to watch out for the thought, I'm never going to drink again.
I have one of the posts on the captain's table on rumradio.org is barriers to recovery.
There you go.
Exhaustion, dishonesty. I go through in this in length. Impatience, argumentativeness, depression, frustration, self-pity, cockiness, complacency.
Yeah, overconfidence almost killed me.
Expecting too much from others, letting up on disciplines, use of mood-altering chemicals, wanting too much, forgetting gratitude, it can't happen to me, and omnipotence. And I go into all that area. It's a good post.
That's a great list.
Yeah, and I go into it in length of each one, what it looks like and what happens. And, there's some really good information on the website. I'm hoping
Great.
In time.
How do I list?
It's the Captain's Table, the drop-down box, and it's barriers to recovery.
Captain's Table, barriers to recovery. I love that we're able to accumulate things that have really helped us and been part of our experience, and then share that experience, and it becomes other people's strength and hope. That's great. I appreciate
anyway,
it.
Anyway, well, you're welcome. Thank you for co-hosting with me. I'm glad that Chase didn't come on. He was, as a matter of fact, he found out last minute he had like 10 people over his house having a barbecue. He forgot about that. So he kind of, but just as well, we didn't have, you know, other than Kyle, we didn't have too many people call in. But hopefully this it'll continue to grow. The, let's see, what's the, got the call-in number? Let's see. You got the call-in number?
That, yes, it's, let me, 1 second, flip a page here.
I got it. It's 949-534-0621. Hopefully, I'm hoping with the article going into the recovery today should give the website as well as the radio program a lift.
Yes, I think so. And
I've been disappointed before, though. No doubt. Alcoholics are tough. It's a tough crowd to break into, let me tell you. Being a know-it-all among know-it-alls is a hard job.
Earlier you were sharing about the fact that you were running a meeting and fewer people came and then nobody came. I've had that same experience, and we just keep showing up, keep planting seeds, and keep praying about it. That's my experience.
Yeah, you know, and that's some of it. Sometimes that's the best you're going to get. It's really in God's time and in God's plan how it all kind of washes out when it's supposed to wash out. We just have to suit up and show up and put it in God's hands.
We're not responsible for the results anyway, just the effort.
The effort. Great. Well, thanks again. And
you're welcome.
I think I'm going to go.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yes, thank you out there. And you're hearing us on the MP3 archive. So you can download this to your MP3 player. You can listen to it on the computer. You can drive to work with my dulcet tones and Harold's dulcet tones and be lulled into a sense of spiritual recovery and sobriety. Go to a meeting. Get
That's
a sponsor.
That's right. God bless you,
work
Betty.
The steps. Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night. Bye, everyone.